Heritage Tier Livestock Limited. Morning, welcome.
Thank you. Juanita and Paul Marshall, we're the directors of Arateatea Livestock Limited. So, greetings from the Motu. Could I ask the panel, do you know where the Motu is? And it's not Gisborne.
We went up there on our tour.
You did, perfect. Thank you, Eric. So, our family has farmed in the Motu since 1966. Our 600 hectare block is split into two 700 cow dairy farms. We have the fourth generation living on farm, and intergenerational stewardship underpins the continuity of our business. I think in total we submitted on 137 of your proposals, and we opposed only five. And today we want to talk about four of them. The first we want to talk about is the integrated management of freshwater resource within the Waiau catchment. The second topic is Rule 32, Farm Dairy Effluent Systems. The third topic is Rule 23, Intensive Winter Grazing. And the fourth topic is accounting for nitrogen and phosphorus contributed to freshwater. So topic one. The integrated management of the freshwater resource in the Waiau catchment. Look, we accept that the Manapouri Power Scheme is of national significance, but are concerned that adequate account has not been taken of the costs that that generation has imposed on our community and on the ecosystems in the lower Waiau River. 97% of the water that pre-controlled flowed from Lake Manapouri down the lower Waiau to the sea is now diverted through the West Arm Power Station with tail race discharge to Doubtful Sound. 97%. And the essential character of the lower Waiau has changed. It's changed from a stable single stem river system to, in many cases, a braided river with an unstable meander pattern over a substantial floodplain. The lower Waiau is now little more than a drainage channel used by Meridian to divert heavily sedimented flood flows to the sea. The artificially rapid rise and fall of river levels during and immediately following high rainfall events contribute to bank slumping, which delivers sediment and gravel to the river. The sediment load has manifestly choked the Te Wai Wai Lagoon, and gravel load has raised parts of the riverbed that exacerbate downstream flooding. Meridian's response to landowners whose properties now routinely flood is to suggest that this is part of a natural process. So on June 7, 2017, the Lower Waiau community came together to form a catchment group called the Lower Waiau River Care Group. Peter Horrell, who will present to this panel tomorrow, and I co-chair that group. And the group's primary focus is to improve the health of the Lower Waiau River. Outside our community, the adverse impact of the Manapouri Power Scheme on the Lower Waiau catchment is little known. Within our community, there is a sense that the Te Wai Wai Lagoon is close to collapse as a direct result of Meridian's reduced flow regime, and the state of the lower Waiau generally is Meridian's dirty little secret. It's their inconvenient truth. So look, we strongly support the integrated management of freshwater enshrined in the National Policy Statement on Freshwater Management, Objective C1, And we note that the MPS policy E1A requires full implementation of the policy by 31 December 2025. But we also note that MPS policy E1BA allows for that 2025 completion date to be set back to 31 December 2030, where the Regional Council considers that, one, meeting the 2025 date would result in lower quality planning, or two, would be impracticable for it to complete implementation of a policy by that date, that is 2025. And we believe that both of those are relevant to the Waiau catchment. With respect to consideration one, the quality of planning would be improved were the timeframe to be explicitly adjusted by the Regional Council to allow matters pertaining to the Manapouri Power Station resource consent beyond its expiry in 2031 to be considered contemporaneously with the FMU processes within the Waiau catchment. The FMU processes and the resource consent process are necessarily distinct, but much of the information required, such as limit setting and allocation of the resource, flow regimes and their impact on the ecosystems within the Waiau River, and particularly the lower Waiau, will be common to both. The alignment of timescales would allow Council, Meridian, and our community to work toward a common future for the Waiau catchment, focusing Council's planning resources on integrated, higher quality planning outcomes, rather than doing essentially the same work twice. With respect to consideration two, the resource consent for the power scheme, as we noted, expires in 2031. Should the 2025 default completion date for FMU processes within the Waiau catchment stand, the implementation of the Water and Land Plan Policy 39A and with it Objective C1 of the MPS across the Waiau catchment will become difficult to the point of being impracticable. The focus would be on the impact of land use on a greatly reduced freshwater resource. It is a nonsense to embark on limit setting without being able to consider the allocation of the total freshwater resource within that catchment. The vast majority of that resource is represented by the consented diversion of flow from the lower Waiau by Meridian, which will not be considered before 2031. Integrated management of the freshwater resource requires the management of the resource in its entirety and must include the full impact of the Manapouri Power Scheme on the lower Waiau catchment. In practical terms, the timing mismatch, 2025 versus 2031, would defeat the integrated management of the catchment's freshwater resource. We simply ask, will the policy of integrated management of the freshwater resource within the Waiau catchment be best served by the default date of 2025 or better served by the alternative of 2030? For us, the answer is clear. Only the date of 31 December 2030 will make the complete implementation of Water and Land Plan Policy 39A practicable and thereby achieve the MPS Objective C1. So we seek the explicit deferral of the completion date, of the full completion date for the FMU process as it applies to the Waiau catchment until 31 December 2030, as permitted under MPS Policy E1B A, 1 and 2. So, sorry that was so dense, but I thought I'd better get it out there. Topic 2, Rule 32, Farm Dairy Effluent System, a topic close to my heart. In 2015, our company retained the professional services of Opus International Consultants to design and supervise the construction of our farm's effluent system. The design provided for an HDPE-lined storage pond for effluent delivered from two sludge beds, each fitted with weeping walls. And the regional plan specifically referenced IPEN's Practice Note 21, effluent storage ponds, and subsequently Opus provided us with a producer statement for the pond. No producer statement was provided for the sludge beds, and the performance of the sludge beds fall significantly below the design brief. Upon review, it was evident that the key design parameters for sludge beds set out in IPEN's Practice Note 27 were not incorporated into the Opus design. Now, 24 months on, operationally, nothing has changed, and discussions continue. On this point, Opus commented to us in writing, and I quote, that while you, Aratiatia, raised the requirements of IPEN's Practice Note 27 in your letter of 23 February 2016, at the time of design, it was not a requirement to design to this practice note, as it had not been adopted as design criteria by the consenting body, Environment Southland, end quote. Had the regional water plan referenced IPEN's Practice Note 27 sludge bed design, a producer statement specific to the sludge beds would have been provided, and our current impasse with Opus would have been averted. So some people view the explicit referencing of IPEN's practice notes within rules such as Rule 32 as being unnecessarily prescriptive. We, however, see those references as actually providing farmers with a measure of protection through the mandatory provision of producer statements that otherwise does not exist. So for that reason, we support the specific inclusion in Rule 32 of the plan of IPEN's Practice Note 21 as it's drafted, but we also seek the inclusion within that rule of IPEN's Practice Note 27, sludge beds. Topic 3, intensive winter grazing. This winter, our grazier grew 174 hectares of fodder beet, grazed 6,000 mixed-age cows, and our cows were some of them, as part of a 2,000 hectare land holding. And theirs is a large-scale operation achieving exceptional results. And we understand the overseer nutrient budget for that operation reports a total N loss to water of 14 kilograms of N per hectare. Our grazier employs industry best practice, that's true. But the relatively low N loss is also influenced by the sheer scale of the land holding. This is the standard of winter grazing of cows that council should be actively encouraging. However, as drafted, Rule 23 would require our grazier to get a resource consent. Does that reinforce best practice? No. All it will achieve is increased compliance costs. If, however, a mixed threshold for resource consent were used, such as the greater of 50 hectares or 10% of the effective area, the mitigating effects of having a portion of a land holding not in crop, as is the case for our grazier, would be incorporated into the rule. Now, we haven't attempted to model the number of consents applications such a rule might generate, but we would expect a significant reduction in the number of consents required compared with Rule 23 as drafted. Of course, that would give council less direct oversight of wintering, but there is an opportunity to improve environmental outcomes from good management practices across all winter cropping activities, irrespective of area. And we have in mind that the mixed threshold for consent could be supported by more good management practices incorporated into the permitted activity requirements for all wintering. For the most part, these good management practices are not actually rocket science. Simple strategies guiding paddock selection for cropping, and crop feeding management have been shown to have significant impacts on nutrient loss. But as we drive around the province, we see examples of poor winter cropping management that could so easily be remedied. For example, crops grown across swales, which turn into effluent charged ponds over the winter, only then to be drained to the nearest stream come springtime. And crops grown on sloping ground and grazed up the slope. If Rule 23 required critical source areas to be left uncultivated and fenced off from stock while the surrounding crop is grazed, and required cropped slopes to be grazed top to bottom, such sites would become the things of the past. We believe that real environmental gains can be garnered through focusing on these low-hanging fruits on all winter crops, through an amended Rule 23 supported by the ongoing extension work of Environment Southland's land sustainability team. In summary, we believe that scale, together with good management practice, should form the basis for Rule 23, and we seek the amendment of Rule 23 to become a mixed rule, where winter grazing area requires consent if the crop area is greater than either 10% of the effective area of each land holding or 50 hectares, but with the additional good management practices specified within the rule as permitted activity standards. So, topic four, accounting for all sources of nitrogen and phosphorus contributed to fresh water. All sources of nitrogen and phosphorus contributed to fresh water should be subject to the same regulatory oversight. NPS Objective CC1 and its NPS Policy CC1 require regional councils to establish and to operate a freshwater quality and quantity accounting system for FMUs in the context of freshwater objectives and limit setting. The exotic fishery contributes both N and P excreta to the freshwater column. Those contributions should be included within the council's freshwater quality and quantity accounting system, which would then inform the limit setting process. We're not quite sure how you'd go about that, but we seek a policy objective and rule framework to account for and to manage phosphorus and nitrogen discharges to freshwater by the exotic fishery. So, in summary, gentlemen, you've heard from us today on four topics which impact on our business and our sense of community. Just to recap, we seek the explicit deferral by council of the completion date for the FMU process as it applies to the Waiau catchment until 31 December 2030. We seek the inclusion of IPEN's Practice Note 27, sludge beds, within the Water and Land Plan Rule 32. We seek the adoption of mixed criteria as the basis for Rule 23, intensive grazing, and we seek a policy objective and rule framework to account for and to manage phosphorus and nitrogen contributions to fresh water by the exotic fishery. In closing, as a business, we are energised by the prospect of science-led innovation which will lift on-farm performance and shrink our environmental footprint. Innovation underpins our family's business and will ensure that our grandchildren and generations yet unborn can access the same high-quality fresh water resource our generation once enjoyed. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Are you happy now if we put questions to you?
Happy.
Great. Just before I pass over to the panel, I'll just make the comment. I imagine the points you were making about the Waiau catchment were made to the three councillors on the panel rather than to this panel as a panel that can change the contents of the plan, because the plan doesn't actually set the dates that you were talking about. In terms of that, you're probably aware of this also. This council has published a progressive implementation program for the NPSFM, which has the limits within the Waiau catchment being set by July 2020. That's not something we have any input to or control over. You may also be aware that last week the government released a new version of the NPSFM called the NPSFM 2017, which requires this and all councils to revisit those progressive implementation programs by 31 December 2018. So the council's going to have to go back, this council's going to have to go back and look at all of those dates that it's already published. So I imagine that's what you were asking these three gentlemen to think about.
Indeed, and yep. And from where we sit.
So I don't want to actually talk about that anymore, because as a hearings panel, we can't deal with that. But I'm sure these three councillors will bear that in mind. In terms of the point you make about Rule 32, have you had a chance to look at what's called the Section 42A report?
Briefly.
Okay, just in case you missed it, the officers are now recommending to us that both Practice Notes 21 and Practice Notes 27 are explicitly referred to in Rule 32, and that compliance with both of those practice notes has to be signed off by a chartered professional engineer. So the very point that you raised, if we agree with the recommendations from the officers, will be avoided in the future. And the relief you seek will be in the plan.
Sounds like a very good recommendation to me.
Yeah. And the point you make about intensive winter grazing, they are well made. We've had lots of submitters talk to us about similar concerns. And the, I guess, all the solutions that you suggest to us are sensible ones, and are certainly ones that we'll be giving serious consideration to, along with a whole lot of other good ideas that other submitters have brought to our attention. So the effort you've made there won't be wasted, I can assure you. So that's all I wanted to say to you before I pass over to the rest of the panel. Boyd?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your presentation. It's been very good. On Rule 23, you've made a recommendation there to give us, for us to consider. Have you thought of the opposite of somebody that didn't want to meet that and what they would do to get around your recommendation? In other words, unintended consequences by having a standard out there and others find ways of actually working around it.
Lloyd, unfortunately, every industry is dogged by rat bags. They are the minority in most industries. For the most part, those environmental gains that I talk about are actually, to my mind at least, our minds, best secured through education. And that's why we talk quite encouragingly about the extension work from the Land Sustainability Team. But there will be some who simply refuse to lift the game. And for those, the rule needs to have some teeth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I was going to ask a couple of questions about topic one, but our chair has kind of ruled that out.
We could talk later.
Well, I would just ask one question, which has some pertinence, if that's all right, Chair. How many cumecs is the flow of the Waiau discharged to the sea, and do you have a comparison to the Aparima? That would be my question.
I don't have a comparison to the Aparima, but the consented minimum flow from the control structure.
No, at the sea.
Well, it varies.
Okay.
Doesn't it?
Be an average.
Okay, so we might carry this on later on, eh? If you want to.
No questions from me, but thank you for a very clear and well thought out submission.
Morris?
Yes, thank you, Paul and Anita. That was very clear, and as with Eric, the chairman has covered the questions that I want to ask about the points that you made. Thank you.
No further questions from me, but thank you very much for taking the time to put together a very well considered presentation for us.
And a bit of passion.
Thank you very much. We're now going to adjourn for morning tea, and we'll come back at 10:20.